Welcome back. It's the Jason Rand Show, AM 770 KTTH. I don't like the sound of me on tape. We should just delete that. It is your lovely Monday morning as we speak. It's 5:04 p.m. in Helsinki, Finland, and the podiums are set up. The President of the United States, Donald J. Trump, has been meeting one-on-one with his counterpart from Russia, and we call that What's Trending in Trumplandia.
What's trending? Happening now.
So when this happens, we will take it. If you're just joining us or you just woke up, the way this works is Russia is taking the role of home country, even though this is in Finland. And then so Putin will speak first. We don't know how long his statement will be. And then President Trump, then there will be questions, which is a bit unprecedented because Putin loves things heavily scripted. Yes, he will sit down with Megyn Kelly, but no matter what they tell you, the questions are submitted in advance. He will sit down with Chris Wallace from Fox, but because he is cagey and shifty, he will not provide the direct answers to the questions that are asked. Things like, did a team of 12 Russian military officers actually engage in interference with the American elections in 2016. He'll sit there and answer and say, well, you say they did, so that must be true, and I don't know. But just to remind everybody, just to bring you back down to ground level, that Vladimir Putin's not the good guy here. He doesn't have a point of view. The fact that he is a strong leader is not an admirable quality because the guy has found a way to suppress any sort of transparent media in his country. He doesn't like hard questions. Hard questions get in the way of his agenda. Yes, Russians shot down the Malaysia Air MH17 flight over Ukraine a couple of years ago. Yes, he assassinates his critics overseas. He assassinated a guy who was a British citizen with polonium in his tea. By the way, a colleague, a former KGB co-employee, Putin assassinated him because the guy was telling people that Putin likes little boys, knowing full well that might cost him his life. Well, it did. So there goes that story. And then, what now, 2 months ago, another British citizen, a defector, Sergei Skripal, a former GRU guy, who was tried and jailed in Russia. The Russians and the British did an exchange. And just like the exchanges that we did for 47 years in the Cold War, and the unspoken agreement after an exchange is that those people are off limits. They're now civilians. In the case of Skripal, he literally was a civilian. So was his daughter and a British citizen. And they were a murder was attempted. And if anyone out there is saying, well, what's your proof? Well, here's the thing. I trust the British forensic process, but keep in mind the Russians practically shoved the British face in Putin's boobs on this one, because a specific nerve agent was used that was only developed in Russia in the 90s for the purpose of doing an end around, getting out of the chemical weapons ban treaty. The United States and Russia, we got rid of our chemical weapons in the 90s. But the Russians found a loophole. They said, well, you know what's not in that treaty? Are chemical weapons that haven't been invented yet. So they invented a family of chemical weapons called Novichok. No one else has them. So in other words, it wasn't a pointy stick that they attempted to kill Skripal with. It was something so specific. You know, I mean, it's like taking a Colt Peacemaker, you know, or a Ford F-350 or something like it. Something that basically screams United States of America and killing someone with it and then expecting not to be fingered on that. The Russians used a nerve gas that only exists in their arsenal. And then 2 weeks ago, a British couple found apparently the container, the vessel that the Russians brought it to Britain in. The woman is dead. The man is still in critical condition. So that's Vladimir Putin. And then we get up to 2015 and 16. And this is, here's the backstory. So this you must know before you hear anything Putin say. This you must know. 2015 and 16, and this is where a lot of the Democrats are way off. They're way wrong on this. 2015 and 16 had nothing to do with the Russians boosting Donald Trump. The target was Hillary Clinton. Full stop. Period. Final. Putin's personal vendetta against her goes back to the 90s with her husband, who did a victory dance on the grave of the Soviet Union, like we all did. But Putin is a guy who's on record saying that the destruction of the Soviet Union was literally, his words, the greatest tragedy of the 20th century. Yes, sure, there is that troubling little thing called, you know, World War II. Putin says that is that's baby S compared to the destruction of the Soviet Union. He was one of the guys who the Soviet Union worked out great for him. They picked him out of college to be in the KGB. He got a better apartment than you. He jumped ahead of you in the line to buy a car. He had a better hospital system for him. He had a better education system for his kids. He got to go to better stores. The KGB, people in the KGB did just fine in the Soviet Union. The KGB's job was internal security and spying. Spying on the army, spying on doctors, spying on the Communist Party. It was their job. Then you fast forward to 2008, Hillary, of course, running for the nomination for the Democratic Party. Her platform was vote for me because I deserve it. Didn't work, as it turns out. This Barack Obama guy wins the presidential election. And one of the first things he does is he names Hillary Clinton as the Secretary of State. So this is here's a little known fun fact. And this is not in any way, shape or form a excuse, but the U.S. State Department, not the CIA, the State Department actively promoted anybody running against Vladimir Putin. Physically inside of Russia, there were Russian citizens employed by the State Department openly to go around and advise any Russian, locally or nationally, who wanted to run against Vladimir Putin. So this is the United States educating people on how to come up with slogans, how to logo, how to knock on doors, how to run an election. To us, it was benign, right? Because, hey, democracy is the greatest gift ever given to man, the whole thing, and no one does it better than us. We should teach you how to do it, and it sure worked out for Germany, the whole thing. And by the way, there are also 600,000 American troops in Germany helping them guide their way to democracy as we demilitarize them. So this is what Putin's reference is that whoever was Secretary of State in 2009 and 10 and 11 was behind an active measure to unseat him, to use the Russian Constitution against him. It didn't work, but he never forgot it. So fast forward to 2015, this woman is now running for president. And this is, I saw this all weekend long as I was watching the chat shows and the whole thing. Everything was about these indictments from Friday, these 12 Russian military officers and the GRU, the whole thing. Not an ounce of responsibility for losing that election was laid at the feet of the incompetent Democratic Party or Hillary Clinton. But face it, go back to 2015. Remember, it was a pretty lame field of Republicans. None of them really were standing out. And it was almost a fait accompli, of course, with the entire media on Hillary's side. She ran the most arrogant, entitled campaign in my living memory. I mean, I've never seen anyone basically get up there in front of a microphone and say, I deserve this. Even, by the way, Bob Dole, decades in the Senate and Congress, secretly, he felt like this should be a slam dunk. But he never said that. Hillary basically said that. Hillary basically ran on vote for me or GFY, if you know what that means. That's effectively what her bumper sticker said. I'm going to win so big, I'm not even going to Wisconsin. Then we find out over the weekend that one of her closest leg humpers is even admitting that when the Democratic emails were hacked, that the Republicans found out that Democrats were losing ground in Michigan and Wisconsin. So even the Democrats knew because part of their research, part of their opposition research, revealed that they were losing ground in Wisconsin and Michigan. And so they didn't hit the fire alarm. So I'm not hearing anybody put some of the blame on Hillary's campaign for losing. I mean, ultimately, it was hers to lose. It's not like the Russians were sitting there actually affecting individual votes. That's not what they did. The big win for them, the reason these guys are all getting dachas on the Black Sea and stolen Volvos out of Sweden is because the absolute gold, the brass ring was when they hacked into the Democratic emails. John Podesta, who was the campaign manager for Hillary Clinton, fell for a spear phishing trick that 14-year-olds don't fall for. He sees an email address that looks similar to Google, but it's not really Google. And he gives them his password and his username. They find out, amazing, isn't this amazing? The Russians find out and they release to, quote, Wikipedia, close quote, that guess what? The Democratic Party is conspiring against Bernie Sanders. Every one of those millions of Bernie bots who really honestly thought that he had a chance to be president, because of the release of that information, none of them voted. So there you go. That's your fast, that's your quick version about what happened in 2015 and 16. That's what we're up to. So anyway, the press conference is going to kick off here in a little bit. We'll get to that. When we get to it, we will take it live back in just a second. Brian Suits filling in on AM 770 KTGH. You've got the Jason Ranch Show. Let's go. AM 770 KTTH, the Jason Rantz Show here on a Monday morning. Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rantz. You can reach me on the Twitter machine at Dark Secret Place. And if you follow me from before, then good for you. The great Twitter bot purge left me largely unharmed. But a lot of celebrities, specifically celebrities, lost millions of followers on the Twitter machine. So anyway, and let's see, I think Obama lost like 3 million that were bots that were shown to be not human beings, just reacting to just bots reacting to things. Trump has like 28 million, I want to say, followers, and he's been active today on the Twitter, and he lost about a million. And so the more high profile you are, the more bots were following you, because private companies are selling followers and the whole thing. So anyway, at Dark Secret Place, if you're on the Twitter machine, if you want to send me a super secret email, that address is darksecretplace@protonmail.com. It's encrypted, and it's in Switzerland. So again, we're standing by for the press conference, the post-meeting press conference by Putin and Trump. And I am disturbed by how many conservatives feel that the way to push back on Democrats screaming about collusion and all that is to embrace Putin's authoritarianism, his murder, this thing about him being a strong leader, you know, and all that crap. A couple things, by the way, in spite of all of the electoral interference that Putin implements as part of his government policy in his own country, in spite of that, all polls show that he is very popular in Russia. Even, you know, the anonymous polls is what I mean. When Russian state TV, when RT comes up to you and says, "How much do you love Putin?" You know, everyone says 1,000%, you know, whatever. But in anonymous polls, people still say, "Yeah." You know, you don't understand. Russia was down. Russia was being kicked in the 90s. A victory dance is being done on us. No one extended a hand. So, yeah, we like the fact that now the rest of the world pays attention to us. We like the fact that we took back Crimea without a shot being fired from the West. We like this fact. We like the fact that we took back parts of Georgia that were peopled by ethnic Russians, you know, et cetera. And so, I mean, I should say part of my background is that I had a real scale fall from my eyes moment. When in 1998-99, I was deployed, I was in the Oregon Army Guard, and it was my second or third deployment. In my career in the Army Reserve and Army Guard, I checked the box. It said, send me to wars or civil disturbances. So I went to Desert Storm as a medic. I was mobilized for the L.A. riots when I moved to L.A. from Seattle. I went to Bosnia in 98-99, and part of the time in my year in Bosnia, because the Russians were part of the American peacekeeping effort. We thought we invited them in. Boris Yeltsin was the president of Russia when he was sober and when he was drunk. And we invited them into the Bosnia peacekeeping mission to show an example of former foes cooperating, blah, 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 quack, quack, woof, woof, durka, durka, right? So anyway, we had to rotate Americans through this hellhole of a base where the Russian airborne brigade were on. And I drew the short straw for about 3 months, and I'll tweet out the video. It's on Vimeo. I was embedded with these Russians with the idea that I was going to be immersed in Russian language and all this. But the scales fell from my eyes after months of living with the Russians. And I grew up in the Cold War, okay? I go to Wazoo, Ronald Reagan's the president. And I didn't get to vote for him the first time, but I did get to vote for him in 84. So I'm on campus. I'm in Navy ROTC in Pullman at Wazoo. I can't wait to get in an F-14 and just start eating Russians for lunch and the whole thing, right? I'm a Cold War kid. And that was the height of the, and we won. Before I could ever fire a shot, we won. We were fresh out of foe. And all of this behavior that I thought was Soviet, like most of you, like most Americans, I attributed all, you know, the denial that we shot down the Korean 747, the denial that there was a leak at Chernobyl, that immediate denial, and then the explanation, and then the blaming of the West or whatever. I put that down to Soviet behavior. What I learned in being embedded in the Russian army in Bosnia in 98-99 was that's just Russian behavior. It was their reflex to say, we didn't miss that joint patrol. You were at the wrong place. We didn't run out of fuel. You didn't bring it to us. It was a reflex. And so for a lot of conservatives, Russia became an afterthought. After 1991, it became that basket case economy where the Soviet Union used to be. And to this day, it's a third-rate economy. Italy's economy is bigger than Russia's. Russia's a one-trick pony. Russia's natural gas. But it's still run by Russia. And so that's the difference. That's why I caution conservatives to stop pushing back at liberals by wrapping your arms around Putin. Believe me, it's a wrong wagon it's a wrong star to hit your wagon to. That's the metaphor. All right, we're probably a couple of minutes away from the press conference. We'll take a break and be right back with the press conference out of Helsinki, Trump and Putin. It is Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rantz. You've got the Jason Rantz Show on AM 770 KTTH. Welcome back. It's the Jason Rantz Show here on a Monday morning, AM 770 KTTH. Brian Suits filling in for Jason, and we're standing by to stand by. Meanwhile, we take you to Helsinki, Finland, where an enormous crowd of Russian and world media, including some Americans, are standing by waiting for a joint Putin-Trump press conference. And the administration yesterday, if you didn't catch any of the national chat shows, and which would make you part of the majority, by the way, then you missed some of the expectations were being pulled back. Ambassador to Russia, John Huntsman, was saying that, look, you know, calling it a summit is probably a misnomer because there's not a single issue that's on the agenda bigger than anything else. This is going to be sort of a big deal. This is going to be a broad thing about North Korea, about China. Trump spoke earlier today in the great grand greeting hall, which is very, 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 very reverby. Here's a little bit of what Trump said. Trump is sitting there left of camera, and Putin is sitting there to the right. Trump is sitting forward on his chair, you know, gesturing, looking over at Putin. Putin's doing that thing where he leans back with his legs spread. He's just like actually slouching in the chair, which is sort of the Russian power move. It means I don't have to adopt a more attentive posture. I'm just sitting back here. So my bar on this meeting between Putin and Trump, and we talked about it with John Decker from Fox there in the first hour, is the best I can do is just warn any of our listeners in Alaska, you might want to pack a bag because there may be a possibility that Trump has traded Alaska for a bag of magic beans. But like I say, that's my bar because that's probably not likely. What is also not likely is there's not going to be any grand resolution to Syria. that was pretty much ensconced. When the Russians put men in Syria, when the window to get rid of Bashar Assad, if you thought that really was honestly a true sensible foreign policy objective, if you thought getting rid of the guy in charge of Syria, who was actually protecting religious minorities, including Christians and Jews, if you thought getting rid of him and starting a Sunni chaosocracy in Syria was a good idea, then your window for that closed. because Putin, after you drew a red line, whoever was president before Trump, after you drew a red line and then Assad crossed the red line and used chemical weapons and you didn't do anything, then you lost all moral authority to ever make a pronouncement about who should be leading Syria. At that point, Putin invoked the 60-year alliance and friendship between Russia and Syria, and he sent his guys. He sent his planes. He sent his boys. He sent his mercenaries. For those of you who don't know, by the way, back in February, because the Russians are fighting the war in Syria with proxies, with guys who have recently separated from the Russian military. They're not on active Russian military service, but the Russian Ministry of Defense has contracted with a private contractor called Wagner Group or Wagner Group, and they recruit and hire Russian veterans, recently separated Russian veterans. So back in February, one of these private military contractor groups was advancing on an American special operations base on the Euphrates River near the Syrian city of Deir ez-Zor, right? This started around 6 p.m. So a handful of American special forces and Rangers and other guys at this forward outpost, they see a large formation of dismounts of ground infantry with tanks and armored personnel carriers and even artillery. They call back and they say, we have some traffic for you. We got some targets moving up, but so far so good. We'll warn them off. And after all, there's a liaison in Baghdad. There's a Russian liaison and there's an American liaison. And the American crosses the hall, talks to the Russian, and he says, hey, heads up. Looks like there's a huge Syrian army formation heading towards one of our positions on the Euphrates River. Are these your guys? And the Russians said, nope, not our guys. And it literally went all the way to Mattis. And Mattis said, obliterate them. So we did. When the dust settled around 4 a.m., and you, again, I caution, you may not have heard about this, but we killed about 250 Russians back in February. We showed the Russians. We never did that in the Cold War. We never did that. I mean, I trained to do that. And we sort of simulated it in the Gulf War, but it really wasn't killing Russians. We never have gone head to head with them. And even this was, you know, through a private military contractor. So the Russians are pretty embarrassed about this. They have a huge chip on their shoulder about this, because what happened was we used air support. We used AC-130s. We used artillery. I mean, if you don't know this, we are conventionally on the ground in Syria in a big way. We have artillery, which is a significant investment in muscle and heavy lifting. We have artillery, special operations, Rangers, the whole thing. We have helicopters. We got A-10s. I mean, we're prosecuting a war there, but it's defensive in nature. We wait for you to come to us. Well, the Russians came to us, and they didn't wave a flag and say, oh, by the way, we're Russian citizens. We didn't know who they were, but we wiped out about 250 of them. How do we know this? Because they were on Facebook at the time. They were instant messaging with their girlfriends back in Russia. They had their smartphones with them. And within hours, we were getting real-time battle damage assessment from people. There's a Russian counterpart to Facebook called VK, Vkontakte, for contact, VK. That's a Russian Facebook. Same shade of blue, by the way, same font. And so on VK, Russian wives and girlfriends were updating in real-time what their boyfriends were saying while they were saying it, until suddenly they weren't answering their text. And by their count, we killed about 250 Russians. The Russians were stung pretty badly, because here's the thing. Putin is doing this on the down low. He doesn't publicize in Moscow, oh yeah, our private contractors are really kicking ass in Syria and the whole thing. In fact, chances are, if you're a Russian private contractor and you die in Syria, they're going to bury your carcass in Syria. They're not going to ship you home feet first. They're going to pay a death benefit to whoever you designated, but your body's not coming back to Russia. So that's the recent history. Will that be on the agenda? Well, maybe. What's the other thing on the agenda? Well, Trump stated that he wants Russia's help with North Korea. Well, that's almost giving up the farm. Once you tell Putin that there's something you need from him, then guess what? You know, if you're looking around the poker table and you're wondering who the sucker is, you're it. We really don't need Putin's help with North Korea. We either need the North Koreans to say the words in English that they understand what denuclearize is, or we tolerate them as a nuclear power. Probably that second thing is going to happen. And I don't know what Russia or China can do, because the Chinese are lying when they say, when we think they have influence with North Korea, we're overstating their influence. And so can Putin help us with North Korea? Well, it's not like they have a hell of a lot of trade with North Korea. Here's another little known fun fact. Russia and North Korea actually have a border. They share a border. The overwhelming majority of the DPRK's border with China goes from the Yellow Sea in the west. It goes hundreds of miles in some parts over the Yellow River. But at the very end, right before you get to the Pacific, there is literally like 15 miles of North Korea that shares a border with Russia. The Russians have recently improved the roads there, the checkpoints, the whole thing. All the indications are that the Russians are going to find a way to materially support North Korea, because the Putin foreign policy has no positive or proactive sort of aspect, like spread the Russian language through peace and harmony throughout the world and make balloon animals to the children's and the orphans of the world. It's nothing like that. The Russian foreign policy is whatever the Americans are doing, throw a monkey wrench in it. It's erode American influence. So that's what it is. I don't know what you get out of talking with Vladimir Putin about that, because he'll deny all of that. We'll be back in just a second. Again, when this press conference kicks off, we'll take it. It is a big deal out of Helsinki, Finland. Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rance on the Jason Rance Show, AM 770 KTTH. That's Anderson. It's a little Anderson Cooper for you.
The president runs a country. He does not hold to the same norm.
Anderson is there in Helsinki, standing by. It is AM 770 KTTH, the Jason Rance Show. Brian Suits filling in, and you can follow me on Twitter at Dark Secret Place when this thing kicks off. We're coming up. Let's see, producer Darren, we're coming up on 1 hour late. This is, I got to say, very un-Trump-like. Trump is punctual.
He has been.
Yeah, it's a refreshing change from the prior 8 years, yeah, when it was pretty much, it happens when it happens, so get over it. And you should be lucky that I'm here talking and all that. Trump at least hits his hit times really well. And as a TV guy, he also understands something, that basically, if you start at the top of the hour, meaning 59 minutes and 59 seconds, no matter what hour it is, you're kind of screwing TV and radio. The people actually broadcasting you, we're required at the top of the hour to chime in because of the federal government and tell you who we are. Minimum. In a lot of cases, it's when we make our money, when we play some commercials for you. So Trump knows generally a lot of his pressers kick off at like 10 after, because he knows that, you know, you want to start the next hour, you want to set it up, you want to do a little bit of setup, you know, and all that. So he knows that. Putin clearly, because this is not how RT runs, this is not how Russian television and state-run TV runs. They go on when Putin goes on. Earlier today, the president was sitting there with Putin in a very reverby hall. And I teased this. I didn't play any of it. So here's a little bit of this is about 2 hours ago, before they went into their one-on-one meetings. This is Trump discussing his concerns with this meeting and with Russia. Now I do this.
We have discussions on everything from trade to military to missiles to nuclear to China. We'll be talking a little bit about China. Our mutual friend, President Xi.
And by the way, that's not somebody eating Doritos. Those are all the cameras. Every time he opens his mouth, he makes that one gesture. That's when all the cameras are going off.
Not too long, but it's getting close to 2 years. But I think we will end up having an extraordinary relationship. I hope so. I've been saying, and I'm sure you've heard over the years, and as I campaigned, that getting along with Russia is a good thing, not a bad thing. And I really think the world wants to see us get along. We are the two great nuclear powers. We have 90% of the nuclear, and that's not a good thing. It's a bad thing.
The nuclear.
I think we hopefully can do something about that, because it's not a positive force, it's a negative force. So we'll be talking about that, among other things.
So that's from earlier today, and here's the thing, is this is another reason that Putin is popular, though he took a big hit. I'll tell you why here in a second, but he is restoring the Russian military. They are the days of broken down tanks in the former East Germany and all that. Those are done. I know in 1999, when I was embedded with the Russian army, we were lucky to get a reliability rate of around 1/3 of all their vehicles for patrols and things like that. But things are way different now. Russia is a world leader in anti-submarine technology. And why wouldn't they be? They continued spying on us. In case you thought that it was a moratorium on spying when they took down the Soviet flag, then you'd be absolutely wrong. In fact, the Russians, here's what's funny. The Chinese are going full stop between Seattle, Bremerton, the key port. The Chinese full court press on spying in the Pacific Northwest is huge. You know what the Russians do? They just spy on the Chinese. They just say, you know what? You guys go collect all that stuff. Then we'll check your work. And so the Russians are, they have world-leading technologies in hypersonic missiles and next-generation nuclear delivery devices, like the Russians unveiled. And we don't know if this is true or not. They are testing it. But a nuclear-powered cruise missile that is clearly a second-strike weapon. It is not a first strike weapon. It's not a self-defense weapon. It's a strike back weapon. If you strike, whoever you are, Banana Stand, China, or America, if you hit us with your nuclear weapons, we're launching nuclear cruise missiles that will, at a time and place of their choosing, cruise all around the world undetected. And about 3 or 4 days later, they will impact in the graphics that the Kremlin released a couple of months ago when Putin was announcing this. The cruise missile hit somewhere on the West Coast, somewhere between Pooh City, San Francisco, and like sort of Portland-ish. And that, for instance, is something the United States has never tried. You know, a autonomous robo-nuclear cruise missile? You know, imagine the liability. So when Russia wants to spend money on world-class technology, they do it military-wise, because also they make a lot of money with military sales. Russia is a energy state. They are a natural gas state. That is what they do. When the bottom falls out of that, the Russians take a bath. That is their primary revenue stream. Their economy is smaller than Italy's, so they're not a first world country. They simply are not. When the World Cup kicked off, which was 3 weeks ago, I forgot. Putin used the World Cup the day the World Cup kicked off. He announced that the retirement age was going up. You know, this is as true in Russia as it is in America. That, you know, as they say, Social Security is the third rail of politics. You don't touch it, or you know, you're zapped. And so he used the World Cup, which to his credit, evidently it came off just fine. I actually watched soccer for the first time in my life, and without yelling, somebody pick it up and run. And so it looked good. You know, it was a showcase. It was terrific. That's why the Russians do these things. That's why Putin did these things. But he used the first day, the excitement of the World Cup kicking off in Russia, to announce to the Russian people that, the retirement age is going up. And that means that the age where you're vested in your pension is going up as well. So Putin took a big hit in popularity, a big kick in the crotch on that one. And so they're, you know, the Russians are no different than Americans on that. In that, you know, don't mess with my bank account. Now that we can have bank accounts since 1991, now you're messing with it. So he's not real happy about this. And so they are an energy economy. And it was interesting, you know, last week you saw Trump lecturing Angela Merkel about dependence on Russian natural gas. You know, the fact of the matter is that it's kind of the other way around, that if Germany doesn't want Russian natural gas piped in to Germany or into Western Europe, the United States can send tankers full of liquefied natural gas from New Orleans to Bordeaux, France, and we can actually undercut the Russians. We can lowball the Russians in natural gas because we make natural gas so cheap because of fracking, because of the miracle of fracking. which history will record, fracking was like the invention of refrigeration, that no one really even understood it when it happened. But fracking absolutely cratered the price of a cheap, cleaner natural resource that is in abundance in North America. Fracking is so significant that you know who started funding anti-fracking movies? Russia, Qatar, the Emirates. I forget, what was it, Matt, producer Darren, you know the Matt Damon, John Krasinski movie? It was like something country. It was that anti-fracking movie about 3 years ago. Do you remember that?
Oh, I'm not. Oh, I don't remember.
It's a Matt Damon movie. And guess what? It was anti-fracking. Yes, it was funded by the Gulf Arab states, as well as a certain country that formerly known as the Soviet Union. So that's
Promised
the recon.
Land.
What's that?
Promised Land?
Promised Land! Yes, don't watch it. Don't anyone watch it, because it's anti-fracking propaganda. All right, we'll be back when we get this press conference. We'll hit it. At Dark Secret Place, if you want to add me or follow me on the Twitter machine, we'll be back in just a minute. Brian Suits filling in for Jason Rantz this week. He's on the vacay, and you've got the Jason Rantz Show, AM 770 KTTH. Let's